Welcome to the world of Mark's Money Mind. I am your host, Mark Troutman. This educational personal finance show combines money lessons, timely topics, personal stories, and community wisdom to help listeners and viewers master their finances to enjoy a stress-free life of financial freedom. This week's show is a live recording at Camp 5 Rocky Mountain Week 1 in collaboration with the co-hosts of the Mile High 5 podcast, Doug Cunnington and Carl Jensen. We answer audience questions, both humorous and serious, along with special guest Pete Adney, also known as Mr. Money Mustache, Travis Hughes of Downshift Financial, and Mindy Jensen, co-host of the Bigger Pockets Money and Mindy on Money podcasts. Enjoy the show.
Hello, world, and hello, Camp 5. Welcome to the Mile High 5 podcast. I'm Carl Jensen with my co-host.
I'm Doug Cunnington.
And we have another guest on the panel tonight. Who are you?
I am Mark Troutman from Mark's Money Mind.
Cool. And what are we going to do tonight, Doug?
Today, we're going to answer questions with our live audience right here at Camp 5 Rocky Mountain Week 1. So we asked for questions earlier today, and we have a wide range from very serious to very silly. And while we're all very knowledgeable up here, we don't know the answers to all the questions, so we're going to have some folks from the audience come up and answer those, which don't be afraid, anyone. If you're coming up, you already know. We talked to you earlier. We're not going to pick on random folks. And I think that's it. Is there anything else to add here?
No, I don't think so. Let's get into it.
All right. So what's our first question or anything you want to talk about?
Yeah. So, Doug, we are going to start off with some of the easier ones, some of the softball questions. So this one is a little bit silly, and people who have listened to our podcast before, has anyone listened to our podcast before? Okay. So apparently whoever submitted this question has also listened, and thank you, Darren and Jolene, for your asparagus contribution to our podcast, which we may or may not eat live today. But so this question is, on a scale of 1 to 10, how happy were you to see asparagus served in the cafeteria at Camp 5? It was a surprise to me, Doug. How did you feel about it?
It's always shocking, but 11 on the scale that they've given to us here. Just ecstatic, and we didn't coordinate or anything like that. But we were unable to give a poll in the afternoon to find out how many people smelled their pee just in there. I don't know. There's a lot more hands up than you would expect. Disappointed and happy at the same time. Mark, what was your experience?
Actually pretty excited because I really do like asparagus. It's one of my favorite vegetables. And however, they were a little on the thin side. I kind of like the thicker ones.
It's not the size of your asparagus, Mark. It's how you eat the asparagus.
Yes.
I'll go into some of my background. I was an organic chemistry major, minor, and I learned about asparagine, that's the amino acid, and I was talking to someone, I think it was Robert, who said, yeah, so probably 1 out of 20 people do not have the side effect of the asparagus pee. Mark, are you?
I did not experience that, as a matter of fact. Yeah, okay. Also was not sniffing the urinal very closely.
You would not have to sniff the urinal. You would know. So, Mark, you are a genetic anomaly, but maybe
okay.
In a good way.
Well, there you go. Either that or I can't smell. One of the two.
You would know. The whole bathroom area smells.
Okay, well, then I guess I'm an anomaly.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay, let's go to question number 2, and I have an answer to this. What was the most embarrassing moment on the way to Phi? Before I answer, do Mark or I think you two are probably better adjusted than me, so maybe you don't have a silly story like I do, but do you have one?
I don't really have one. I'll have to think about that.
It's not really embarrassing, but at some point I stopped contributing to like my 401k, like after the Great Recession, 2008 timeframe. And obviously that would have been a good time to put more money in. But in hindsight, again, not embarrassing, but I'm just like, oh, that would have been a much better decision. So,
dude, that's kind of like a humble brag. I don't think that's embarrassing at all.
Yeah. But okay. Later on, I turned it around and everything's super awesome. So maybe I needed that lesson.
Okay. So at this point, I am trying to make eye contact with my lovely bride, who does not know what I am going to say, but can definitely relate to the story. So For those of you who do not know our story, we did live in flips, which means we would buy a house and live in it while we reconstructed it, which is it's a life choice that can make you a lot of money, but can also cause you to live in a construction zone, which can be suboptimal. But there was more than once I think we did this where our whole kitchen was torn apart, and we had a crock pot because we were too cheap to order food out, which we could have easily done. It would have been like 10 bucks pre-inflation, pre-now period. But we had the crock pot on our bathroom, so we would do our bathroom business in the same place where we cooked with the crock pot on the bathroom counter, and then we would do our dishes afterwards in the bathtub. And I think this happened more than once in our life. Is that correct, lovely wife?
We've done like 9 kitchens. It's happened about 9 times.
Okay, so Mitty just said we've done like 9 kitchens. We've done this like 9 times. So that was probably a poor life choice.
That's the only embarrassing thing. I was thinking it was like late at night and the lights are out and you're going to explain that the crock pot was mistaken for the toilet. Or...
Mark, there are way worse stories, but they're not fit for, we'd have to change our podcast to a much harsher rate. I'm wondering if Mindy has a worse story that I'll repeat if she has one. Did we do anything even more ridiculous than this on our way to Phi?
We did a lot of ridiculous things. I just can't remember off the top of my head.
Okay.
Can you give me more notice? I can think.
Okay, so Mindy just said she might be able to come up with a better story if we give her more time, but let's move on.
All right. So before we jump in too far, Mark, you have a new podcast. You want to tell us just a little bit about it in case people haven't listened
yet?
Yeah,
actually, you were very instrumental in helping me launch that podcast, so I appreciate that. It's Mark's Money Mind podcast. I have about 20 episodes out at this point, or 20 episodes as this is released. And it is really geared towards both people that are new to the financial independence community or just unaware of it completely. Also, a younger audience. That's one part of the audience. And the other part is also, I know a lot of people in the financial independence community are listening. So we do get into some deep conversations, and I do like to have the community aspect as well. So I like to bring people from the community and outside and have discussions about finances, but also about life.
Awesome. Anything surprising in doing the show for a couple months at this point?
No, I actually was a little concerned that it was going to become a job for me. And thanks to your help and keeping it as efficient as possible and being as lazy as possible and putting it together, right? It actually has been a lot easier than I expected, and I'm getting a lot of encouragement from the listeners and so forth. So it's been great, and I'm looking to continue to do it.
Awesome. It's a good show. Y'all should check it out. So are we ready for the first person up?
Yes, I think so. Before we get to that, I will allude to what I think is our worst FI moment. And I can say this, maybe we'll say it at the end for people who want to stand, but you remember I'm looking at my wife again. Do you remember when our sewer line got clogged and we had the 35 quart thing in the basement of our house?
Ugh.
Yeah, teaser for later, but let's move on. That was the very worst FI moment by far, but let's go on to the next question.
That sounds horrible. And we'll bring up Pete, although he's having a conversation. Oh, are you ready to
talk to Mindy?
Yeah. You want to come on up?
Okay.
All right.
I was prying Mindy for more details of the sewer line incident because I'm really interested in that subject and I have some stories of my own. Actually, that would count as an embarrassing fire story, I guess.
Awesome. Well,
can
first,
I begin with it, or would you want to ask the question first?
No, you could definitely go into it, but who are you, Pete, in case people are listening at home and they don't know?
I'm Pete in real life, mild-mannered retired dad, and on the internet, I'm Mr. Money Mustache, leader of an ironic fake cult of mustachianism.
Very good. And what's your embarrassing story?
So it's fire related because I was do-it-yourself renovating a house. So like obviously that's kind of a frugal thing. So you could say it was my fire mindset's fault that I was even attempting this. But so I moved into a new house. I was doing lots of renovations. It wasn't quite done, but we had moved in as a family. And then I went down to the crawl space to do a little bit more plumbing work. And I'm like, why is the soil wet in this crawl space? I mean, this is under a house. The rain doesn't come down here, right? And then I was walking And then I looked at my hand, and I noticed there were a couple of corn kernels on the palm of my hand. I'm like, why is there corn in the crawl space? And then I followed the trail to the sewer pipe, which had been like spewing, and there's like toilet paper and water and corn kernels and lot turds sinking into the soil slowly. And then I realized, oh, okay, I think the plumbing isn't quite as reliable as I thought.
So hence you were trying to get tips from Mindy on how to contain that in a 35-gallon bucket, apparently, right?
Yeah, I thought I'd heard her issue utter the word corn as well, and I was like, did you have a corn?
It's very similar, actually.
Okay,
but
excellent.
Go on.
Well, we've been trying to have a higher brow show, but I'm glad you brought it right back to the level. No, that's perfect.
Okay. We've covered both urine and feces within the first 10 minutes. Yes.
Okay. So, Pete, you did a couple case studies from the audience last night, and it was I thought it was amazing. I think we learned your thought process on how you take a complex situation and then simplify it. So I want to ask a couple questions about that, but how do you navigate a complex email, for example? Maybe you get a handful of spreadsheets, and it's a lot to process. So how do you look at it, and how do you simplify it?
Really, I just have to cut and paste a bunch of stuff. So just so the audience of this podcast knows what we're talking about, people come and ask me for help, and they're like, dear Mr. Money Mustache, here's my financial situation. And it's like, blah, like just a whole bunch of numbers. And like, my sister has a car that I sort of own some of it. And like, my dad's gonna, and then my healthcare is this and my kids are that. And like, oh, and also that other car is not really paid off. So like, you have to really sort all this stuff out. And then what I really want to boil it down to is just three things, which is like, what is your income right now? And like, over the next 10 years, is it going to be sort of the same? That's number one. Number two is, what are your savings right now, or also known as your net worth? And then number three is, what is your spending right now? Like, how much does it cost you to live? And show me the stuff in the categories, like, where is that money going? And I really need them to give me that third thing too, because a lot of people think that there's something is spending, but it's actually not spending. Like, your mortgage payment is partly saving, the part that's paying off your house, and it's partly spending. Or student loan payments are like that. Or people are saving into their emergency fund, and that's actually saving. So I like to cross out and cut and paste until you get it really down to these single three numbers. And that's like the starting point for understanding the picture of how this person's financial picture really is. And thus, are they really close to retirement or far away? And how long is it going to be?
I'm kind of curious, what do you think when people send you these case studies, what do most people get wrong, or how should they think differently if you had to give them advice?
It's totally different depending on the person, because in our group, a lot of people are oversavers and they're overcautious. So they're saying like, well, I have this, you know, like my parents are 102 years old and they have $10 million, but I'm not going to count that because, you know, they're my parents and I love them. And then, you know, I have this, you know, my employer has $400,000 in my account for me, but I'm only going to count the part that I save myself. People are often selling themselves short in terms of what they really have going for them. And Social Security is another example. Everybody assumes Social Security is not going to be around, even though it is. That kind of stuff is to let them be a little bit more optimistic and just in a realistic sense. And then, because if you assume the worst case in your planning for your future, then effectively what you do is you live a worst case life for your entire life, because you never let yourself enjoy the optimism of like good fortune that you're probably actually creating for yourself.
And you mentioned Social Security as something that might be missed by many people. Are there any other items that you see that people are missing in their kind of vision consistently or commonly?
It really depends on the person. A lot of people have rental houses, for example, and they don't really think about the fact that their rental houses are getting paid off. So even if the cash flow is not so good right now, it's going to gradually get better and better over time with lower loan balances. And yeah, I don't know. I don't have a good answer for that, because
well, Social Security is one that you brought up last night, and I agree that that's something that a lot of people don't put into their plan. So yeah, I think that's one thing that a lot of people don't kind of.
Social Security, inheritances, which are fairly inevitable in many, many families, and no one ever wants to think about it because it's like they feel like they're killing their parents by thinking about an estate, when you're not. It's actually your parents would be happy to know that their money's going to you someday. Mm-hmm. And then also getting raises. A lot of people, they earn more as their career goes on, but very few people assume that's going to happen. They just assume like, oh, conservative, I'm never going to get a raise, which is That'd be a pretty sad career. Most people really do get better at stuff and thus earn more money as they go on.
And what about the spending pattern? Do you find people saying, well, I'm only going to spend this forever? And do you ever talk to them about, well, maybe your spending might change over time or anything like that?
Yeah, that's a good point. A lot of times spending goes down through people's lives. And because if you're starting out as a young adult with two kids, you might be at peak spending. Two married people with multiple kids, everything's going out the window. You're buying everything, stuff for the kids, investing for education, upgrading your house, buying appliances. And I've found as a parent myself that that stuff really slows down as the kid gets older. And then there might be a college tuition thing at the end. And then it really just like those expenses just drop away totally.
Yep.
Unless you're doing the whole parental life support thing, but
yeah,
you don't have to do
economic
that.
Outpatient care, as it's mentioned.
Yes.
Millionaire next door.
Yeah, I like that term. And if you're rich enough to do that, and if that's your thing, it's okay. But you don't have to assume that you're going to do that.
Right.
So that's another assumption. Like spending is really not that. It tends to go down as you get better at spending.
Cool.
All right. Oh, good.
Yeah. One more follow-up. So, Pete, you hinted at something a moment ago. You said most of us are pretty conservative, and I agree with that. We have way oversaved, and I think that's how most of us are because it's human nature to err to the worst-case scenario. Maggie Gunther gave a talk earlier today about giving and giving back, like how can we contribute back and use our wealth or our time to make the world better. I know, Pete, you wrote a post some years ago. I think you gave $100,000 away, and I know you've done other things privately. We can edit this out if you don't want the rest of the world to know, but I was there when you donated more money and maybe you just don't want to brag or you're shy about it. But it always annoys me a little bit, like Warren Buffett, he's like, when I die, I'm going to give my $50 billion away. Why don't you do it when you're alive, when you can see some of that money doing good or at least...
Well, he totally has, right? Warren Buffett has already given like tens of billions of dollars to the Gates Foundation.
Yeah, he has, but I think most of his money is going to go away after he passes away. So I don't know if this is a comment. You can comment on this if you want to, but you don't have to. But I think along those same lines, like what Maggie was saying, it would be... If we find ourselves in a really good situation, it might be better to try to change the world a little bit while we're still alive, like
definitely.
You have. Like, why do we have to wait till we're dead? Like,
definitely keep challenging yourself, because any wealth that you have right now, there's like the amount that's enough, and then you probably have another layer on top of that, and then it's probably going to keep growing as you get older because you're going to be wise with your money. And most of us, including me, just be like, oh good, now I have even more of a safety margin. Now I'm looking at my net worth. Wow, look at that. It's so much more than I need. And that's like a little bit silly, because it's only helping you in a very, very shallow way. Like you're just looking at numbers on a screen. So you really need to challenge yourself and be like, all right, give some of this away, because, read some books that inspire you to do that. Like for me, it was The Life You Can Save. That's a great book to read. And it really just lays it down like one step at a time of the logical case for like, it's so silly to just have way too much money when tiny amounts can make such a big difference in other people's lives. And guess what? You still get to be rich. You don't have to be super like Schindler's List situation where you're like, oh, I could have saved five more lives for this tire that I bought for my car. So you can still just do a middle ground and just challenge yourself to give a little bit of an uncomfortable money away. And I wrote some articles each time I did it, because my website was making extra money for a number of years. So I've given $100,000 away each year. And then, but to be honest, it stopped making much money, and I've really cut back on my giving because I'm a chicken, not because I could actually still afford to keep giving $100,000 a year away, but I've really cut that back because I'm too fearful, because it would be giving from my savings rather than my income, even though I do have too much savings. So anyway, everybody deals with this fear, but being open about it and reading the books like kind of gets you a little bit more courage. And if your friends do it, you're more likely to do it yourself too.
All right, we could keep talking with you all night, but we just have a couple more questions. This one's just for me. I'm acting like I'm reading the question, but how do you feel about asparagus, and what did it do to your people?
Well, I'm part of the genetic majority, let's say, but like Mark, I love tons of asparagus, so I'll just get those whole Costco packs and roll them out on the grill with butter and garlic and balsamic vinegar and cook them all soft, and I'll just pay the price in the bathroom.
It's a small price to pay. And for those watching on YouTube, we have from our friends of the podcast, Aaron and Jolene brought us asparagus from Spain. Pete, are you able to roll your R's and do the Spanish pronunciation of asparagus?
I don't know. Esparrajo. Like that? Blanco. Muy grueso.
It's pretty good.
Is this from Italy or Spanish? Spain, okay.
All right.
Spain, yeah.
Very good. Okay, I have a serious question too. So you expressed interest in some thoughts about coaching. Can you talk about that a little bit and explain why you enjoy coaching?
Since I started the blog, Mr. Money Mustache blog, I would sometimes get these really interesting emails from readers who would send in their financial situation, and I would sometimes make a case study article about it. And then I thought, oh, this is kind of cheating. Like, it's too easy to make an article about just someone's stuff that they gave you. But I would always get this positive feedback, and people are like, oh, case studies are my favorite articles, and can you do my case study? So I started to realize that people do like these things. And there's, of course, lots of TV shows and radio shows where that happens all the time, so I guess it's kind of normal. But then I started taking it more seriously, where people will send me a personal question and a not for publication on the blog, and I still enjoy helping them. And then I did one paid coaching job just because I thought it'd be interesting. And this guy presented me with a really nice opportunity to untangle a nice financial mess. And I really kind of like pulling the strings and putting it all into those three categories we talked about. So I did that with this guy and it worked out really well. And I felt like we even got a good friendship relationship out of it. So I thought, hey, I'm going to do that some more, I think. So I might become like a super, super low effort, like one case study per month kind of financial coach, maybe a little bit with just some blog readers. And it would be private. I wouldn't make articles about it.
Sure. And I guess it's pretty low risk for you to give it a shot. Like, and you can just test it out and see if you like it.
Right. Just do one at a time. And then if I get bored, then I just won't do one at a time.
All right. Very good. All right, Pete, thanks a lot. Well, where can people find you in case they've never heard of you?
Well, MrMoneyMustache.com, which is spelled M-R, Money Mustache. Or if you just search for those words, you'll find me. And probably the best place to start is maybe just on Instagram, because there's like pretty pictures. And I have a link to my bootcamp email series as my first Instagram post, the pinned one. So that's like the easy, you know, I don't want to get tangled up in a bunch of blog posts way to start.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. Yeah, thanks for the invitation.
Yeah,
I'm honored.
Thank you. All right. We got a few questions to answer here. So I'll pose this to you, Carl. And this is from Ingrid, a fine listener. What has surprised you about post-fi life?
Ooh. This is a simple and complicated question all at the same time. I guess the surprising thing is life is pretty much the same. Once you quit work, your life isn't going to magically become better. J.L. Collins told me this, if you have money, it solves money problems. It doesn't solve anything else. If you expect, like I did, quite in a silly way, that FI would make your life instantly better and you would be happy and unicorns and it would rain beer, that doesn't happen. You're still who you are, just you don't have a job to do. And that might be kind of depressing, but I think the upshot of that is now you have the time to work on yourself. And if you're not completely happy after that, now you have the time to try to figure out why and seek the help you need or work on yourself to make yourself happy. So, and just to be clear, I quit my job like 7 years ago and 3 months, and I'm in a much better place. It took me a little while to get there, but I'm so thankful for it. You can't expect that you're going to leave your work and be instantly happy the next day. Doug, it's funny. I remember the first day I quit, I think I quit on a Thursday. And on Friday, I took a walk around the park, and I'm like, oh, okay, like, what's next? And it's not going to come to you. You have to figure it out for yourself. But that's the journey in figuring that stuff out is most of the fun, and I think it's highly rewarding. So I don't know. Did that make any sense at all?
Yeah, it did make sense.
So, no, it actually didn't.
Yeah, I would say to the answer to that same question, where my life is today, what am I, 9 years in retirement, I never would have expected it to be here. You never know where your paths are going to lead. And I retired from something, not to something. So I really didn't know what life after FI was going to look like. Shortly after I left work, I got an opportunity to teach a financial literacy class in the high school. And 8 years later, I'm still doing that. So that's awesome. And that's just a volunteer giving back, like, you know, Maggie was saying in her presentation today. Also, just this community. I found the FI community after I retired. And I am just so impressed with all the, I'm just looking across this audience here, all the friends that are in the audience here that I've made over the years. And I would never have guessed that that would be what my life looks like 9 years later.
Yeah. And one final thing I'll say is I think happiness is a moving target, because You've all heard of hedonic adaptation. You just get used to wherever you are. And that's the same thing with Phi and anything else. You'll do one thing for a while and then it'll make you happy, but then you get bored of that. So I think the key to long-term happiness and Phi is to find a sequence of novel experiences that make you happy. And for some of us, that's travel or language learning or writing code in new languages, but it's going to be ever-changing and it's going to be different for everyone. And we've said this on the podcast, Doug, if it was easy, someone would write a book, a paragraph, and then we would all do that, but it's not easy, and that's why there's 10,000 books on happiness, because there is no easy single answer.
Well said. We'll just keep plugging through. I won't even answer. What is still on your bucket list to do post-Phi? And I'll just give this one to you, Mark.
Yeah, so I would say last year I traveled for the first time halfway around the world, and that was outside my comfort zone, and I really enjoyed it. And again, it was with a community of Phi-minded people. And I am very excited to do that more. And so this year I'm going back to the same location in Bali for an event, and I also will be going down to Australia and New Zealand, so definitely spreading my wings as far as travel goes. So that's definitely how I envision moving forward in this post-Phi period.
And is there anything specific on your bucket? Because it's like you're progressing, you're going
farther. Yeah, it's really experiences with friends. And we had a conversation about the book Die with Zero in one of our breakout sessions. And it's really just having those awesome times with friends and creating those memory dividends. And that's really what I'm looking forward to.
Nice. Do you have any bucket list time? Do you have a bucket list?
I do, but I'm more curious to hear how you would answer this, Doug. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Every time I come to your house, every time we record in Doug's basement, and I think pretty much every time I come there, he has a new guitar. Yeah. And I'm kind of envious. He had a new Gibson Les Paul, like an actual Les Paul, not the Epiphone one, although you do have one of those too. So Every time I come to your house, you have a new guitar. So is your dream to like play lead from Guns N' Roses at the County Fair?
Oh, gosh. Wherever we play, right? Yeah, I don't have a bucket list. I think, like many of us, I want to travel more. And we have a dog, Georgie, and we're codependent, so we don't travel internationally very much, just to be completely straight up. But would love to travel to Iceland and some far north places to see the Northern Lights. So I think that's on a lot of people's list, and it's well within our reach. Like, we know people that have done it, so I think in a few years, when we have a little more flexibility, we will do a lot more traveling like that. So, boring travel is what everybody says.
Okay.
All right, this is a good one here. As a recovering fired software engineer, I'm still too much in routines and planning. How do I introduce more spontaneity into my life post-Phi?
Well, for me, I find just kind of trying things, and you never know what you're going to like. And just being open to the idea of trying new things. Not everything is going to work. You're not going to like everything. But that's how I found certain things that I do like and don't like. So I also volunteered on a board one time, and I found out I don't like politics and I don't want to be involved in that. And that's fine. So now I find a different way to give back. But I would just say try a number of different things. But you don't have to go like all in, for instance. If you want to do some activity, maybe sign up for a class or a course, or like we had a group of people that went out climbing, and maybe you just try it and say, hey, I really like climbing, and then you can dive into it. Or maybe I did that and it's one time and I don't want to do it. But I would say try things, but don't do it to such a degree that's this major financial or time commitment, and then just see if you like it. And if you do, then pursue that.
Yeah, I agree. Just test a bunch of stuff and make it a low commitment, low risk. Give it a shot. And you mentioned spontaneity, which, I don't even know if, do you think I'm spontaneous?
Yes.
You do?
Yeah.
Well, thanks.
Yeah.
Do you have an example? No, it's okay.
Right now. So meta.
And then do you think you're spontaneous?
I try to be more spontaneous. I think it definitely leads to more happiness.
Okay. What's the last spontaneous thing you did?
Last spontaneous thing I did? I don't know.
Man. I don't know the answer either, so I don't know why I asked that. Okay, well, do you have any, as we're brainstorming, like, can you force spontaneity where you're like, okay, today I'm going to have no plans, but I'm going to just go to the airport with a bag, and then, maybe not that, but maybe you could go to a new town and and just figure out something to do.
Okay. So one thing, what is the opposite of spontaneity?
Planning.
Planning, that's it. And this is something I never understood about Pete. He's sitting right there, but Pete is anti-planning. And for the longest time, I didn't understand it. But once you plan something, like if you're going on vacation and you have your whole schedule set, then you're going to do those things, and it's going to cause stress because you feel like you have to be somewhere at 7, 8, or 9. So what we like to do on trips, looking at my wife now, because I was the person who would plan every minute, is try to leave like a whole day open. And we did this once in California where we just wandered aimlessly around the town, and the kids stumbled upon, of all things, a cat cafe. And I didn't even know that was a thing. And it was probably, so we spent all this money on this fancy vacation. And if you were to ask them what the highlight of it is, it was going to this cat cafe for like $50. And I didn't think people would derive enjoyment from hanging out with cats for an hour, but they did. And they would say it was their highlight. And that never would have happened if we would have planned everything out and not been spontaneous. And when you're spontaneous, you let life come to you. And there's always going to be an infinite number of things to come to you. And if you have plans, you can't let that stuff come to you because you already have something else to move on to. So it's pretty good just to not have something and let life happen. I don't know, Pete, if I did that any justice or if you have any further comment. He gave me a thumbs up.
He approves. Okay. Perfect. Before, anything else to add on that?
I would just say be willing to say yes. If somebody throws an idea out there, maybe just say yes, even if it's not something that you're thrilled about. Maybe you'll find that you really like it or you hate it.
Before we bring up our next guest, Travis, so he can start making his way up for the panel up here, what is your second favorite vegetable? Assuming asparagus is number one.
Corn.
Corn?
Is that actually a vegetable? Is that one of those weird things that's actually a fruit that I just don't know about?
It's a vegetable and a grape.
Are you doing a K-O-R-N imitation, Chris? Heavy metal money.
Is it just recency bias from hearing about corn recently? And you were just like, oh.
Yeah, it might be. I was going to get a little bit. Yeah, Pete alluded to it in the fashion I was going to mention it a moment ago. I'll leave it at that.
Broccoli. I like broccoli.
Do you actually really like covered in cheese or like does it?
No,
really
just
like,
steamed broccoli.
Tastes awful though.
No, it's great.
I'm a broccoli man.
Come
too,
on, if you like asparagus, you gotta like
okay.
Broccoli.
Okay, so I'm looking at my wife who claims to like broccoli too, but I think it's a lie. It doesn't taste good.
You're the worst. It's amazing.
Okay, so Mindy is saying I'm the worst. I eat it because I know it's good for you, but I don't enjoy the experience.
The experience? Is there like a tactile issue?
No, just the taste of it on my... Do you like broccoli, Doug?
Yeah, it's our go-to vegetable. Okay. And yeah, we eat it all the time. That and asparagus. It's like always in the fridge. Georgie eats broccoli as well.
Your dog eats broccoli?
Yeah. My dog does too. Loves it. Yeah. It's one of his favorite things. Cold, you know, just not even cooked or anything.
So Travis, how do you feel about broccoli?
I don't give it to my dog.
Okay. Do you like it yourself or...?
Yeah. I would say cauliflower is my second favorite. So.
Oh, there you go.
All right.
Oh,
nice.
That's what y'all called me up here for?
Yes. Thank you, Travis. You can
You're excused.
So before we ask the question, Travis, who are you? And can you tell us about some of the work you do?
I'm Travis Hughes. I'm co-owner of Downshift Financial. We're fee-only fiduciary CFPs.
Cool. All right.
So the subject matter is Roth conversion considerations and tax impact. So the first question is it considered earned? Well, I'll just read the whole thing and then we can maybe talk about it. Is it considered earned income? Is it income that can be deducted for HSA? And I think we can talk a little bit about that. Rental loss, other business loss, capital gain loss. So you want to comment on that? Maybe we can just chat about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So Roth conversion is going to be considered ordinary income. So it's not earned income. Like you couldn't use the income from a Roth conversion to contribute to a traditional IRA, for example. I don't know why you would do that, but it's not earned income. It's ordinary. It's not going to help anything with capital gains. Rental income is going to be on a Schedule E. So that's called passive income. You can offset passive income with other passive income, but you can't take passive income to offset ordinary income for the most part. Yeah. I mean, tax considerations, I think particularly with early retirement, it's a great opportunity to do Roth conversions. Obviously your income is going to be very low. You're going to be balancing depending on how much you have in your if you have a lot of money in your pre-tax accounts, you're going to have an RMD problem later. required minimum distributions where you the government's tired of waiting on their taxes. So they start forcing you to make withdrawals. And that can be a double whammy if you have very large RMDs, because when you're on Medicare, if your income goes too high, you can have an income-related adjustment to your Medicare payment. And I think the maximum on that is like $539, yeah, something like that, a month.
Yeah.
That can be pretty substantial later on.
And I think one of the things that isn't asked here but is should be considered is that if you do a Roth conversion, then potentially you may give up ACA subsidies. You want to talk a little bit about
that? Yeah, I actually did that for a client just recently. The way we approached it was we projected the total amount of tax that would be generated by doing the Roth conversions and then the lifetime healthcare expense net of any premium tax credits, ACA subsidies, as well as IRMA and RMDs later on. So basically, we just looked at what is the scenario, the bottom line of like which expense is lower between the net of healthcare and taxes. And in this particular person's case, it came out easier to, or it came out less. I want to say it was around $250,000 in lifetime expenses lower to do the Roth conversions for this person. I don't remember the exact numbers, but.
And one of the ways I think about it as well is, what is that subsidy I'm giving up is effectively like an additional tax to my tax rate. So therefore, let's say you're converting in the 22% tax bracket, but for getting into that bracket, you're losing 8.5% of each additional dollar in that bracket. So effectively, that 22 is like 30.5. And then when you talk about IRMA, which is the income-related monthly adjustment amount, that's actually not as big of an impact as giving up the subsidy. So the subsidy is 8.5%, but the IRMA might be the equivalent of an additional 1% in your tax bracket. So that's another way to think about that. And I think that was a conversation that I've had throughout the weekend at different tables. So I just wanted to throw that out there to people. Any comments on that? Or is that kind of how you look at it?
Yeah. I mean, I just looked at the net dollar amounts, basically, was our approach. Lifetime expenses.
Yeah, and I like that approach too. Also, you're thinking about what is my lifetime tax situation as opposed to what is this year's tax situation. And it sounds like that's what you're projecting out for the clients. But I think a lot of CPAs, for example, they just care about how do I lower your taxes this year without thinking about what is the impact of your taxes over your entire lifetime.
And we can only work within the framework of what we have. So, for example, we have TCJA tax laws. So that's the tax brackets we're in.
Do you want to explain what TCJA is?
The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was the last tax bill that was passed, federal taxes at least. And that's going to sunset next year. I think 2026 is when it'll be the old tax brackets. But, of course, there's probably going to be a new tax bill, right? And between now and 100 years old, there's going to be 12 more tax bills. But we don't make assumptions on what's going to happen there. You can adjust along the way, but we just work within the framework of what is known today and do the best moving forward from there.
Nothing to add.
Nothing to add. You all sound right. Like Charlie Munger.
Rest in peace, Charlie.
Yeah. So, okay. Thanks, Travis. Where can people find you?
Downshiftfinancial.com.
All right.
Yeah, thanks. You. Thanks for helping out.
Okay, so here's one of the fun questions. What is the weird habit you do in the bathroom that you don't want anyone to know? So this is directed specifically at Mark.
So my question is, if I don't want anyone to know, why would I tell you what it is? But I do like to put on like some nice chill music and have candles and turn the lights out. So now you know, maybe that's weird or not weird, but it just, in the morning especially, I don't have all this light coming on, and it's just a nice way to start my day. So all you know that. Also that's smells nice. Good, but it doesn't smell like asparagus.
That's great. That's good. What about you, Carl?
Oh, man. This is the wrong question to ask me.
Yeah, I think the stuff that you know that we do individually, but not at the same time, is already bad enough. So I don't know like what we could say to even top this.
I do have an answer to this, and it might. So Bob Haynes, who Maggie referred to in her talk, convinced me to install a bidet on my toilet, which is an obscure thing in America. Does anyone own one of those things? You don't have to raise your hand, like wink. Okay, I see a couple people. Yeah, Robert and Carl, the way to go.
Okay. Calling them out.
So some other members of my family, which I won't mention publicly, do not use it because I did not get the one that warms up the water ahead of time. But I'm a fan of Wim Hof, the guy who's a fan. So y'all know who Wim Hof is. He's a fan of the cold weather or cold water immersion. And I'm not a fan of that, but...
It helps. You hyperventilate on the toilet.
Yeah, you could add a two and two together and my bidet is not warm. So I get a little bit of that Wim Hof phenomenon. I do enjoy it. It's great.
Yeah. It is a tough one. So I put a Q-tip in my ear occasionally. I know technically you're not supposed to do that, right? I get a lot of nods. But it feels kind of good. And sometimes I do two at the same time. So.
Do you leave them in there for a little while, just kind of walk around?
No, this is super dangerous. So I just give a couple little twists and yeah, good to go. Nice. All right. And...
Yeah.
We can hit the next one, yeah.
Mark, this next one is for you, a serious question. So this person is asking about asset allocation. So they have bonds. What about for rebalancing, buy low, sell high, or 100% stocks? So I'm not sure exactly what the question is here, but I think they want to know what percentage of assets they should have in bonds versus stocks and maybe when they should rebalance.
Here. Yeah, so I mean... This is always an interesting question, and I'll answer it from the perspective of somebody at or near financial independence and retiring like I did. So actually, when I came into retirement, we had 100% in equities, which in hindsight, I wouldn't recommend doing because what if the market dropped right when I retired and I had to start drawing from that portfolio and, you know, that 100% equity position, you know, has dropped. So I would say if I redid it, I would come into retirement with probably somewhere in the neighborhood of about 5 years of cash, you know, spending in cash. So whatever that percentage is of the portfolio, that's what it would be. Not necessarily like, is it an 80-20, 60-40, that kind of thing. And as far as rebalancing goes, I kind of view it more of, I always want that 5-year cash runway. So I'm going to, one of the things I did, and I don't advise, but you know, maybe you could think about is turning off the reinvestment of dividends and capital gains and just letting those, I mean, most index funds aren't distributing capital gains, so it's probably mostly dividends, but letting those accumulate in that cash account to help refund it. But then as that cash account starts to go down to maybe 4 years or 3 years, especially if you're in an up market like we are today, this would be potentially a good opportunity to replenish that and keep that kind of 5-year runway. So not necessarily a asset allocation per se, but more like a cash projection need and then, you know, back into, well, what is that asset allocation? So that's kind of how I view it.
Okay, so you're trying to mitigate the whole sequence of returns issue, but if I understand you correctly, you would get the 5 years of cash and then you would start living off that cash immediately, or would you save some of that cash and continue to sell investments to live in, like, assuming the stock market did not have an issue?
I guess it depends on the size of your portfolio. So in my case, the portfolio is nearly generating just the dividends and interest, especially now with interest rates so high, is nearly generating what I'm spending. So that cash cushion is not really changing. But as far as the replenishment of that cash cushion, some people will take the approach that, well, if the market is up, I will, you know, or at least not down a lot in a year, I'll just replenish it maybe at the end of the year. So I have my new 5-year runway. And if the market, let's say, went down a lot, maybe that 5 years can be 4 years. So it's really a personal preference. For me personally, I just have that income stream coming in, that 5-year cash runway is in essence a buffer for me, or if I start spending more, or because in retirement, your spending isn't necessarily linear. So I might have more lumpy spending and then I might need to replenish, but I certainly would replenish in a year where the market isn't down, for example, and always have that kind of 5-year runway. And if the market did go down, then I may not need to replenish it and I can be okay with a 4-year runway. But usually the market, in most cases, it's going to rebound within, a 2-year period. So maybe worst case scenario, it gets down to a 3-year cash runway. But not necessarily viewing it from, the portfolio has to be 80-20 or 60-40 or, yeah.
So Mark, I'm going to come visit you again. And as you know, I'm a pretty fancy person with fancy taste. So I just hope you keep your fun bucket replenished.
Yes, the fun bucket will always be there. And sure, come on down and we'll have lunch or dinner again.
Yeah, or both. Or both.
Oh, yes.
Just to know
what I thought you said bowl. I had bowl on my mind.
No, both. So, well, yeah,
where is
too.
The bowl? We need the bowl here.
Mark has a great concept for those who struggle to spend money. It's called the fun bucket, where he puts money in a bucket that he has to spend, which I think is pretty cool. It's kind of a Jedi mind hack to force yourself to spend money.
Yeah, it's a little trick to be able to learn to spend. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Especially when cool friends come to visit.
Yes, absolutely.
Or uncool ones.
Okay, as we bring up our next guest, Mindy, she can start making her way up. We have another couple questions. One is, why is Emma so awesome? So thanks, Emma, for that question. appreciate that.
Emma is so awesome because of everything. She is wonderful. She is amazing. She's so, so, so smart. So I don't want to like hijack your podcast. I'm totally going to, but I don't want to. I just have to. So pardon me for a moment while I answer all of these questions that or comments that I've had. Before I address the index funds versus real estate argument, I want to address a few things that have been brought up earlier. Carl calls this a callback. I am not a fan of Wim Hof. I'm not going to be sleeping in the freezingness. Tagging off of Pete's corn story.
Wait. I didn't say sleep in the cold. I just said...
Shush.
It's the bidet. I don't sleep on the toilet. I'm there for a long time, but not that long.
Oh, okay. That's right. Okay, so the Wim Hof, like, cold experience. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
If Japan can introduce warm water to your bidet... So can we, especially since the ceiling in the basement level is not finished yet. So that's a definite miss on your part. Second.
Are there any divorce attorneys in the audience?
Tagging off of Pete's corn story and tying into our most embarrassing moment, money moment, I would like to announce that cast iron outflow plumbing pipes corrode from the inside out. If you have an older house, you probably have cast iron pipes. You're going to experience what we experience, which is not a fun experience. All of a sudden, there's a failure, and 100% of the time, that's disgusting. Also, tagging off of Pete's comment about giving, earlier in this year, we raised money to send several of Dan Sheik's Freaks to Camp Fi. We are recording from Camp Fi. If you are interested in sending 15 to 25-year-olds to Camp Fi, please reach out to me. Mindy@mindyonmoney.com or just come connect with me. 100% of what you donate goes to those kids. I don't keep any of it. Or you can contribute at mindyonmoney.com/freaks and giving advice regarding the bucket list. Start one. If you don't have one, grab your favorite note-taking app and make a bucket list and add to it every time you hear of something fun. Because there are so many... I talk to so many people about their... journey to financial independence. They're like life after FI. And they're like, oh, what do I do next? Have a plan. Steven, you didn't have a plan and it worked out for you. That's like the one person that it ever worked out for. You need to have some sort of plan or some sort of like, I think I'm going to do this or I might want to do that. Start interacting with things that you might want to do. I've got so many more notes. Carl, what did you ask me about?
What's happening?
I think she just took over.
I did take over. Oh my God, you know me. I am very forceful. Okay, what was the question?
Why is Emma so awesome?
Emma is so awesome because she is so smart. Yeah, I know I already answered. What's the next question?
Wait, say who Emma is first, like real quick.
Emma, is Emma in here?
No.
Okay, Emma is just an amazing person. If you want to know more about her, email mindy@mindyonmoney.com.
Okay.
What else you got?
All right. So, what is your favorite part of Camp Fi?
Everything! The conversations that I have with people who are here. Also, that was my question. You were supposed to answer that. You're not supposed to put me on the spot. But Stephen Boyer has created this amazing space that travels around the country. If you're not in the Colorado area, don't worry. There's other places that are near you. The most fantastic part about Camp Fi is having conversations with other people who are in a similar place to you on your journey to financial independence. And if you have a question about what should I do about XYZ, there are 19 people at Camp Fi who know how to deal with it, have done with it themselves, or have met somebody and they can introduce you to that person who has done that thing. So This is a community that is living and breathing and is so amazing and supportive. And I cannot say enough great things about CampFi. What else you got?
I see Emma poking in the doorway here.
Emma, why are you so awesome? Because you are.
We were just talking about you.
Yes. Emma is amazing in every single way. She knows so much about retirement plans, and she's a CFP, and she knows so much about money in general, and she is just like the best person that I know.
And you know what else is really cool? So she's 23 years old.
And yeah, I wasn't even going to say that because yes. I don't want people to be like, oh, she doesn't know that much.
Yes.
She knows more than you. Whoever you are listening and you're like, oh, I think I know a lot about money. Emma knows more.
And what's great about this event is we have four 20-year-olds at this event.
Who know more than yes. I do. And I think I know a fair amount.
Yeah. So I love the fact that there are younger people coming to these events on their own. Well, my daughter came with me, but she would have come on her own anyway. Yeah, Caitlin is here and Julia's here. So I just love the fact that we have some 20-year-olds here and that the Cheeks Freaks are going to the Texas event. And that's so awesome that this community is spreading wide and to a much younger audience.
I am so excited that the Cheeks Freaks are going to the Texas event. But also, if you're listening to this and you're like, oh, FI is for older people, it isn't. If you're listening to this, you are absolutely on the path. You should attend a Camp FI. If it doesn't work out for you this year, then maybe next year. But absolutely reach out to me and I can help you afford Camp FI if you cannot afford Camp FI yourself, because I think that there is so much value in in-person financial independence events.
Okay, so the question we brought you up here to answer was we want you to compare and contrast index funds versus real estate versus bidets.
I'm not doing anything.
It's only the first two. Don't worry about that.
I'm not saying anything about bidets. Index funds versus real estate. So I am a control freak. I am an admitted control freak. Shut up, Carl. And I like real estate because I can control who is in my property. I can control what that property looks like. I can control where that property is. But also, anybody telling you that real estate is passive is a big fat liar. Real estate is not passive. Owning an investment property is an active endeavor. It might not be super active, but it is absolutely not passive. If you invest in a real estate investment trust, a REIT, that's way more passive. If you give your money to somebody else and they do all the work, that's more passive. I'm talking about actual real estate investing. That is not passive. And anybody telling you that it is selling you something. So an index fund is 100% passive. My index fund has never called me up at 3 o'clock in the morning telling me the toilet is clogged, or has never called me up and said, hey, the house is on fire. You need to be honest with yourself. If you want to be actively investing, real estate might be your jam. If you don't want to invest in real estate, then don't invest in real estate. You can still get a really, really great return with index funds. You can get a great return with the stock market in general, individual stocks, if you are willing to do the work. If you're not willing to do the work, I'm not willing to do the work, no judgment, then invest in index funds. And how many people here are index funds millionaires? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. And I think there's a lot of people who aren't here yet. 12, 13, 14. There's a lot of index fund millionaires here. So if you don't want to do real estate, don't feel obligated to do it. What was your question?
Yeah, I'll just tag on to that real quick. Like, I think if you're willing to put time in, you can make more money with real estate. Real estate allows you to leverage money. But that's a time commitment. You got to educate yourself. You have to be smart. You have to deal with landlord issues and all that. So if you're willing to do that, and most importantly, if you have the temperament to deal with all that, like a good tenant will make your life great, a bad tenant will make your life hellish. But it can also make you rich quicker, but you have to put the time into it. I think the default should be an index fund unless you really feel like you're suited for real estate.
Now, Carl, you mentioned that the real estate path could potentially be a quicker path, for example, right?
Yes.
But is it a riskier path, potentially? What is your opinion on that, Mindy?
When you invest in an index fund, you are giving somebody else money, and they're doing all the work. You're investing in the entire stock market, or whichever sector that you're investing in. VTSAX is the entire stock market. other index funds are, you know, this sector, that sector heavy. With a real estate property, you've got, like, you have one rental property. That's it. And that tenant makes or breaks you. Screening tenants is an art. I can interview you and think you are the best tenant ever.
I would hope so.
I would. But I could also interview you and be like, oh, you don't have a job.
I don't have a job. You don't have a
job. Therefore, you don't have income according to my very black and white spreadsheet, and I'm going to pass on you. I wouldn't.
Yeah.
I'm sorry? He's an asset manager, which I'm doing air quotes for. That was a joke from earlier. Mark is not a gamble because I know him. But on paper, Mark is a huge gamble because he doesn't have a job. He doesn't have any income. How is he going to pay my rent? Of course, he says he has X number of dollars. But how do I know that? I mean, you can screenshot anything. I don't know if you know this, but Photoshop is super easy to use, and you can Photoshop a number that says you have $26 trillion. That doesn't make it true. So knowing you means that I would absolutely rent you. I've got a house. If you want to rent it, please, because I would love to have you as a tenant. But there are also a lot of gray areas in tenant screening. So if you don't want to invest in real estate right now, absolutely do not invest in real estate, because it's not everybody's jam and it is a lot of work. There's ways to get around it. Real Estate Investment Trust, which is kind of like a stock for investing. I think it depends on what your temperament is. What was your question again?
Well, Mark had followed up saying the risk, is it riskier to...
Is it riskier? It can be. If you are buying a property in an absolutely amazing neighborhood, an A-plus rental, people who are applying to be in your rental property are A-plus tenants. They're doctors, they're attorneys, they're people who value their credit score and want to pay their rent on time. If you are buying a property in a lesser area, we call these C or D properties. If you're buying a property in that area, maybe the tenants care about their credit score. Maybe they don't. Maybe they want to pay their rent on time. Maybe it's more fluid for them. So if it's risk that you're trying to avoid, you want to have a better property that attracts better tenants. If you are, but on the flip side, that doesn't bring in the highest rate of return. So if you want the highest rate of return, you're going to have to, I hate this word, but gamble a little bit and have a lesser tenant who pays more for the opportunity to rent your property. So there's risk involved. There is less risk involved in index funds, but there's nothing that's no risk.
Correct.
Maybe bonds, but I don't believe in bonds.
Okay.
All right. Any other follow-up questions for Mindy?
No, I'm good.
All right. Thank you, Mindy. Where can people find you?
People can find me at biggerpockets.com, Bigger Pockets Money, or the Mindy on Money podcast.
And Carl.
And Carl.
Mindy and Carl on Monday, where we talk about life after financial independence.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me. It was lovely.
Okay, Doug, maybe a couple more, and then we'll wrap this up. Let's look at this one.
Do you want to read that one?
Kind of put my reading glasses on. Any interest in a new Phi movement? Okay, this is a weird one. Sasquatch Phi? Whereby you pursue Phi to find a life dedicated to traveling the world in search of the, I can't read that word, in search,
elusive,
enigmatic Bigfoot. Discuss. Doug, I'll turn this one over to you.
Yeah, you know, I'm not a big follower of Bigfoot or anything. But yeah, I'm open to this. It sounds pretty good. But I'll shift it a little bit and ask sort of a follow-up question. So Phi has changed a little bit from the early blogging days, which I didn't follow, but you were one of the early bloggers. So how do you see it shifting with like Die with Zero? And there was a whole breakout session with Die with Zero. But yeah, how do you see sort of like the new wave of Phi?
Oh, I think it's super cool because in the beginning, it was early retirement extreme and all these super frugal people who all looked exactly the same, like me, like a dude with facial hair who was a tech bro, like programmer, that was happy living a very simple life, eating beans and taking their bike everywhere and living a maybe a life of sacrifice. And now it's much more diverse, and there's many more versions of fi, like coast-fi and slow-fi. And I think that's a lot healthier because not everyone wants to live that life of eating rice and beans and being super frugal and applying math to every single decision in their life, which I kind of still do. So it's nice. It's nice that it's much more diverse and the versions of fi and also the people involved and the methodologies to get there. So I think it makes it a lot more approachable for many more people. Mark, you've been around for a long time. What
calling
do you think
me
about
old,
this?
Okay. I got it.
Experience, you have wisdom. With age comes wisdom, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, I have seen this shift for sure. And when I first found this community, it did seem like it was a lot about get there as quick as possible, save as much as possible. And I had a life event. My wife passed away. And I realized the value of living a life of balance because we always did live that life. Because we were not living the five principles. We were just, you know, saving and investing. We had no clue about this financial independence community until after we reached financial independence. And I look back and say, I'm glad we lived that life of balance because I wouldn't be able to go back in time at this point and change anything. And so I'm so happy that we did that. And I am very glad that the community is kind of shifting to that. Especially as we get more and more younger people, like we were just talking about in this audience, where they can design a life that is a great life to live, but also reach financial independence. So I'm really excited about kind of the coast-fi, slow-fi approach to things. And I think it's a very healthy evolution of the FI community.
Yeah, I kind of think the number one goal should be to have a healthy relationship with money, where we have an emergency fund, where we can survive a catastrophe. And maybe we can retire early, but however you get there is going to be different for everyone. And I like that there's many more ways to get there now that aren't going to turn everyone off like maybe initially it did turn a lot of people off. What do you think, Doug?
What was the question?
did I ask the question? That was about... So I came into FI a little bit later, But I enjoyed the shift, and I was going to say I've learned a lot from you, just hanging out with you, and you slowly, I think you were shifting maybe around the time that we met in, well, like 2019,
yeah,
2020?
Something like that.
So it's only been a few years, but like I think from that point when we met, I feel like you're doing things a little bit differently, and I, as you told me stuff and we did the show, I could learn from your experience. Not mistakes necessarily, yes. but your experience, you're like, oh, I would have done that a little bit differently. So yeah, I enjoy the shift.
Okay. You learned what not to do from me.
Yeah, tons of things.
Yeah, yeah.
To do.
Yeah. Okay. Everyone has something to teach.
All right. I think we have, do you want to do this one more question?
Yeah, let's wrap this up with an easy one. This one comes from Chris from Heavy Metal Money. That's heavymetal.money, his URL. So this one kind of dates us a little bit, maybe even you, Doug, since you're a little bit younger than me. Maybe Mark and I can answer this one. So this
again,
is
calling me old, but okay.
No,
I got gotcha. You.
We're the same.
We're both
here.
Old. I'm actually older, but okay.
Just a little bit, but you have more wisdom.
All right. Okay. I'll go with that.
This is a Van Halen question. So ooh. Chris from Heavy Metal Money says, David Lee Roth or Sammy Hagar?
David Lee Roth.
Really?
Definitely.
Why?
Because it's the original band, you know? I mean, and I saw Van Halen back then, so 5150, right? And I just enjoyed his antics.
Okay.
Yeah.
And 5150 was Sammy Hagar.
No, but I mean, that's kind of one of their, the Insane Asylum code or something for police. So actually I had that. So I was a huge Van Halen fan back in the day. And okay. I had a license plate that was 5150.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's why I mentioned it.
Ooh, okay. Yeah.
Wow.
What do you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I would say David Lee Roth. It's pretty equal, but I think David Lee Roth because of the just crazy energy.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
When you watch him live, yeah. He is insane.
He was doing like
the early years. Let's say the early years. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. What's your answer?
So I'll back up a second, and I think Van Halen pulled off something amazing, and I can only think of one other band who has done this, who has swapped out their lead singer and maintained their success, and the other one was AC/DC, Bon Scott with Brian Johnson. I think I'm going to go with Sammy Hagar. I don't know. Maybe, yeah. Whoa, Chris doesn't
Chris
like
says
me
no.
anymore.
Chris is on Team Mark.
I don't know. David Lee Roth is great in 1984, but I don't know. Oh, U812? That's probably another bad reference, but for unlawful carnal knowledge.
Hot for teacher.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, sorry, Chris. I'm sorry we can't be friends anymore, Chris. But we still have a lot in common.
Okay, we covered a lot. Thanks for the guest folks that came up here. Mark, thanks for sitting in with
us. Absolutely. I love being here every time. Yeah.
Where can people find your show?
So it's on all the major podcast players, Mark's Money Mind or marksmoneymind.com. All the episodes are there as well.
All right, we'll link up to it so it's easy to get to. Thanks, everyone in the audience, for submitting questions. Yeah.
And are you going to eat the asparagus? That's the real question.
Yeah, asparagus. It's in a can. And to close out, a big thank you to Stephen. We would not be here. We would not all be together.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
I have lifelong friends. I'm looking at a lot of you who I've met over and over again. I saw Sean in New York and Katie and Joe. I've seen you multiple times and all these people. Carl and Robert, you're our neighbors. So Dusty, Jake. So many friends in this audience who are old friends, but so many new friends too. And all of this is enabled by Stephen, who has put together this wonderful thing, and that has brought us all together. So I hope if you take anything away from this, it's this wonderful podcast recording, which will be the highlight of your weekend. No, I'm just kidding. It probably won't be, but you'll take away the friendships and the community, and I think that'll be the highlight and what brings you back, and our podcast will be a close second. So thank you, Stephen, so much for enabling this.
Thanks, everyone. Really appreciate it. And we'll see you out there.
All right.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to this week's show. Please click follow on your favorite podcast player or subscribe on YouTube to ensure you don't miss any future episodes. Also, please leave a rating and review for the show. This helps improve the ranking and enables other like-minded people find the content in their podcast players. If you would like me to answer a question on the show, please send it to mark@marksmoneymind.com and put podcast question in the subject line. Let me know your first name or let me know if you would like to remain anonymous and also your state of residence if you choose. I would also appreciate it if you would recommend this show to friends and family that might benefit from this content. See you next week on the Mark's Money Mind Show. Until then, make some, save and invest, live on the rest. And now for the all-important disclaimer. This show is for education and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered investment, tax, or legal advice. Please consult the appropriate advisor or advisors before implementing anything you hear on this show or any other show for that matter. While I fully intend for everything on this show to be true and accurate at the time of each recording, occasionally errors may occur. So please do your own due diligence on anything discussed.